When Paul wrote to Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 4, he actually emphasizes in a list of qualities, a list of characteristics, if you will, he lists purity. And that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about here for the next few minutes. And I guess I'm supposed to look at that clock, right? Yeah. The world, we know, mocks purity. When I was in high school, one of the worst things anybody could say to you, and I know it was in high school back in the 80s, it's been a long time ago, galaxy far, far away, but back then, being a virgin was something people made fun of. You're still a virgin? Yes, I am. And I stayed one until I got married. And I'm so thankful that I did. Now, that doesn't mean that's an unforgivable sin, but that's the world we live in. They mock purity. And then you've got God who is wanting us, not like a suggestion of, it would be great if y'all would be pure. He is demanding purity from us as followers of Jesus. Purity is possible, and we need to know that. God isn't going to command something of us that He knows we can't do. His command for purity is not something we cannot attain. It might be hard because we live in a culture, they can't sell anything on TV without sex being involved. And I know with purity, it's not all about sex, but that really is the main thing. Purity comes from how we think about things. Again, 1 Timothy 4:12, let no one despise you for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, conduct, love, faith, purity. Proverbs 6:27, and actually Proverbs chapters 5 and 6 are filled with Solomonic admonition for his sons to not fall after the adulterous woman. And if you have time, I'd make the time, you could read it in 5 minutes, chapters 5 and 6. But in 6:27, Solomon asks, can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? Well, the world we live in says, sure, going to give it a try. Purity is not just doing the wrong thing or doing the right thing. It starts in the heart. Purity begins in the heart, the mind. Purity starts from within. In Mark 7, Jesus talks about the sins that come from within, and he mentions evil thoughts and sexual immorality and adultery and things like that. It starts on the inside, and that's why Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount talks about a man who looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Now, I know there's a whole section of people who are like theologically arguing about marriages being dissolved by that, but that's not what Jesus is talking about. He's simply saying, you see, the problem isn't just the doing or not doing of the thing. It's what you're thinking about. When I was a young man, I had an older preacher brother, just fantastic, and it stuck with me all my life. There's a difference in letting a bird fly overhead and letting a bird nest in your hair. Now, the older I get, you know, I don't have so much hair for a bird to be nesting in anyway, but we know what he means. You can see that pretty woman. I live in South Florida, a little further south than you guys. And all I'm trying to say is that down there, there are some women who walk in my community in Miramar half naked. What do you do? You do what I do. You say, well, there she is, and just look away. The problem is we have a culture that says, oh, you look at her and you ogle her and you dream about what it would be like to be with her. No, that's what Satan wants you to be mindful of. And that's why he's just turned everything upside down. Having purity is nothing I don't think you'll ever regret. If you're a young man, you're not married yet, be faithful to God. Be pure. You'll love it the night you get married. And I'm telling you, that may sound square the way the world looks at it, because the world is like, you haven't lived with each other? No. We got married, and that's when we began our life together. Purity is taking very seriously what Paul says to Timothy of fighting the good fight of faith, because in our culture, just like in the first century, it's not like man's any really different. We're the same. You read in Romans 1, verse 18 through to the end of the chapter sounds like modern day America. It does. So it's not that people have really changed. It's just we need to understand this is a fight, and we need to fight that good fight of faith. And we can accomplish this. We can be successful in this as our brother just was talking about, praying to God, keeping Him in the fight with us. We're not alone. Y'all remember the Bugs Bunny cartoons and all. One of my favorites was the little puppy. I think it was like a chihuahua-looking thing. And it would bark and yap, and everybody, you know, like the cats, you know, that was kind of the easy dog-cat going against each other. And the cats would come up to him and start to snarl and hiss. But behind that little chihuahua was a huge bulldog. And he would look at the cats, and the cats would, oh, you know, because they didn't want to fight the dog. Puppy was all right. You're the puppy. I'm the puppy. God's the dog. Bring him with you in that fight. Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And I think he means exactly that. You're pure in heart, you'll see him. What a glorious thing. I mean, you remember Moses. That's what he wanted, right? God said, I'm going to go with you. And he goes, I want to see you. Well, that can't happen. Not with you staying alive. But that's exactly what we're saying here. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Again, Jesus said, I say to everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent, he's already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. Now, we are like, oh, that's just hyperbole. It is hyperbole, but the point of the hyperbole is for you to take it that seriously. It would be better for you to go to heaven blind than to spend eternity in hell because you got your eyes that are looking at everything and lusting after everything. If your right hand causes you to sin, he says, cut it off and throw it away. It's better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go to hell. The culture that we live in, and we know this, I'm not trying to convince you of these things, is obsessed with sex. Can't watch a game without it. We can't watch a TV commercial selling toothpaste about it or motor oil. What does that have to do with it? But they incorporate it into everything. And so what do? We fight. Now for me, I feel a little strong about this because I have four daughters. And so with four daughters, you insist with them their purity, and they're like their mom, they're good. I appreciate that a lot. But when I was a young man, you know, I looked at women, I lusted for women. I wouldn't ever say that back then. I can say that now because I'm way far away from a lot of that in some ways. But in other ways, you can still be an old man and lust. I've seen some old men make fools of themselves. A young woman walks by and they just drooling practically, and you're like, seriously? Come on now. Like, you have a chance with her. One, two, would you want a chance with that woman? Seriously, if she's just flaunting everything, that's not what you want. In Ephesians 6, Paul writes this, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. That's the cartoon reference I was making. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the methods of the devil. For we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, authorities, cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places. I think that's where we say we need to fight this fight. And you don't have to just have daughters. You could have young men. You need to fight the fight with them. Teaching them what it is to respect somebody. A woman might be pretty. Okay. You don't dwell on that beauty to the extent you're going to lose your soul over something like that. And I think we need to pray. As we were talking about just a minute ago, what does Jesus say in Matthew 6:13? In his model prayer, he says, lead us not into temptation. Don't lead us into temptation. Deliver us. Rescue us from the devil. And I think we need to pray more ardently. If you know you're going to a place like I do this, I love watching hockey, and I go to the hockey games, and even there they have, it's the weirdest thing to me, hockey's cold, and they have a cheerleading group that are half naked, and you're like, what does this have to do with hockey? Put the guys back on the ice, you know? But what do? I just don't look. And I'm not saying that's the easiest thing to do for some people. It really is hard not to look. But you got to think, do I want to go to heaven? Or do I want to spend eternity in hell burning? Why? Because I looked at this woman. Just couldn't control my thoughts. In two lists. We've got Galatians 5, 22, 23, the fruit of the Spirit. Starts with love, which we'd expect. Love is probably the number one hard thing. But self-control is the last of those nine characteristics. Peter in 2 Peter 1, when he talks about, you know, add to your faith virtue and knowledge and so on and so forth, he ends with self-control, which I think is extremely important for us as Christians. God commands our purity. He's taking that seriously. We need to take that seriously. And it starts, I think, with the transformation of your thinking. Paul says in Romans 12, I urge you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed. That word transform pretty much is what it sounds like. It comes from the Greek word where we get our word metamorphosis. And we know that as a stinky little old caterpillar becomes that butterfly. And that's not the only example, but that's a pretty easy example of what metamorphosis is. That's the word Paul uses there. You are to transform by the renewal of your mind your whole life. Peter writes, as obedient children, don't be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, be holy also in all your conduct, because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. See that clock. Man, that thing goes down. Are you pushing the button, making it go faster? He admitted. He says yes, so that gives me five extra minutes. David asked in Psalm 119, 9:10, how can a young man keep his way pure? By guarding it according to your word. We fill our time with what we like. And we have phones and social media. And I'm not preaching to y'all. Y'all should never use it. We go to an extreme, and that's not right. But that shouldn't be the last thing you're using before you go to sleep, and the first thing you use getting up. And you've got to really try hard not to get into all that. It's on you. That's the hard part, but it's also the easy part. I don't have to depend on any one of you to control me. God says you control you. And that's a suggestion that might be pretty hard for some of us, but that's exactly what God is wanting. I beg you, he says, as sojourners and exiles, you don't belong here, to abstain from the passions of flesh that wage war against your soul. And again, as Christians, purity isn't a suggested lifestyle, it's expected. I want to close with a passage in 1 Corinthians 9:24, where Paul writes it this way. And again, the idea of fighting the good fight of faith. Paul says, don't you know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So you run in such a way that you may obtain it. Now, I know immediately we're like, well, but we know not everybody. I mean, everybody's going to get that. It's not one person. It's not what Paul says. Paul doesn't say that. He says, all the runners run, but one receives the prize, so you run in a way that you can get it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to get a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I don't run aimlessly. I don't box as one who's merely beating the air. I discipline my body. That word discipline comes from a word that means to subdue. Again, the idea of controlling. Literally, the word means to hit under the eye. But he says, I discipline my body. I keep it under control, lest after preaching to someone else, I myself should be disqualified. Three things I would suggest. Fight the good fight of faith, and maybe emphasize that fight. It is a good fight, but fight it. Pray to God to keep you from temptation. Pray to God to keep Him in the fight with you. And I would close with this. If you don't live it, you don't believe it. And that's not just a statement I'm saying to y'all. That says to me, too. It's easy to preach. It is. But you've got to listen to the things you're saying. I actually beat the 15 minutes. Proud of myself. Barely, but I did it. Thank you.